Hachette Audio presents 7 Days in June. Written by Tia Williams. Read by Mella Lee. Dedication. For Cece and FF, my loves. Prologue. In the year of our Lord 2019, 32-year-old Eva Mercy nearly choked to death on a piece of gum. She'd been attempting to masturbate when the gum lodged in her throat, cutting off her air supply. As she slowly blacked out, she kept imagining her daughter, Audrey, finding her flailing about in Christmas jammies while clutching a tube of strawberry lube and a dildo called the quarterback, which vibrated at a much higher frequency than advertised, gum-choking frequency. The obituary headline would be Death by Dildo. Hell of a legacy to leave her orphan 12-year-old. Eva didn't die, though. She eventually coughed up the gum. Shaken, she buried the quarterback in a drawer full of hip-hop concert tees, slipped on her ancient cameo ring, and padded down the hall to wake up Audrey for her BFF's Hamptons birthday party. She had no time to dwell on her brush with mortality. While she'd admit to being a damn good mom and a capable novelist, Eva's true talent was her ability to push weird shit aside and get on with life. This time, she did it a little too well and missed the obvious. When Eva Mercy was little, her mom told her that Creole women see signs. This was back when Eva's only understanding of Creole was that it was vaguely connected to Louisiana and black people with French last names. It wasn't until junior high that she realized her mom was, what's a fair word? Eccentric, and curated signs to justify her whims. Mariah Carey released an album called Charm Bracelet, Let's Blow Rent on Cubic Zirconia Charms at Zales. Point is, Eva was wired to believe that the universe sent her messages. So it should have occurred to her to expect a life-altering drama after Trident Gate. After all, she'd had a near-death experience before. And that time, like this one, she woke up to her world forever changed. Sunday. Chapter 1. Bite Me. A toast to our sex goddess, Eva Mercy, hollered a cherub of a woman, raising her champagne glass. Eva, whose throat was still raspy from yesterday's gum incident, coughed back a snort at sex goddess. The 40 women crammed around long dining tables cheered loudly. They were bombed. The book club, composed of rowdy, upper-middle-class white women on the business end of their 50s, had traveled from Dayton, Ohio, all the way to Manhattan to celebrate Eva with a brunch. The occasion was the 15th anniversary of her best-selling, well, formerly best-selling, erotica series, Cursed. Lacey, president of the chapter, adjusted her purple witch hat and turned to Eva, who was at the head of the table. Today, she bellowed, we celebrate the magical day we met our bronze-eyed vampire, Sebastian, and his true love, the badass, unwicked witch, Gia. The tables erupted in squeals. Eva was relieved that Times Square's deliriously cheesy S&M-themed restaurant, A Place of Yes, had provided a private room. And oh, what a room. The ceiling was awash in red velvet, and a web of bondage ropes and riding crops decorated the walls. Goth candelabras dangled dangerously low over the black, lacquered tables. The menu of pain/pleasure was the tourist attraction. Depending upon your selection, wait staff in bondage gear would lightly flog you or do a lap dance or whatever, if you so desired. Eva did not desire, but she was a good sport, and the Real Housewives of Dayton had traveled such a long way. These were her people, the rabid fandom who kept her afloat. Especially recently, as the vampire phenomenon and her book sales had cooled off. So Eva chose cuffs plus cookies off the menu. And now she was seated on a gothic throne, her hands cuffed behind the chair while a bored waitress in a pleather corset fed her snickerdoodles. It was 2:45 p.m. She should have been mortified, but she was no stranger to this scene. After all, Eva did write supermarket checkout porn. While most authors had speaking engagements at bookstores, universities, and chic private homes, Eva's events were, well, raunchier. She'd done signings at sex shops, burlesque clubs, and tantric workshops. She'd even sold books at the 2008 feminists in adult film, Faffy's After Party. This was the gig. She smiled indulgently, while her readers swooned over the two horny, dysfunctional, permanently 19-year-old basket cases she'd invented when she herself was a horny, dysfunctional 19-year-old basket case. Eva had never set out for her name to be synonymous with witches, vampires, and orgasms. As a double major in creative writing and advanced melancholia, Eva had accidentally stumbled upon this life. It was sophomore year, winter break. She had nowhere to go. So she holed up in her dorm room, pouring her teen angst and horror fan daydreams into a violent lust fest, which her roommate secretly submitted to Jump Scare Magazine's new fiction contest. She got first prize and a literary agent. 3 months later, Eva was a college dropout with a six-figure multiple book deal. Ironic that she made a living writing about sexy sex. Eva couldn't remember the last time she got naked with anyone, undead or otherwise. Between authoring, touring, single-mothering a tween tornado, and fighting through a chronic illness that ranged from manageable to utterly debilitating, she was too depleted to romance a real-life penis, which was fine. When Eva had an itch, she scratched it in her books. Like a boxer abstaining before the big match, she used her unconsummated lust to give Sebastian and Gia's story a wild edge. It was fiction ammunition. But in the social media era, nobody wanted to picture their favorite erotica author zonked on painkillers, drooling on her couch by 9:25 every night. So in public, Eva looked the part. She had her own tomboy chic take on sexy. Today, it was a gray t-shirt mini dress, Adidas, vintage gold hoops, and smudged black liner. With her signature sexy secretary glasses and collarbone-length curls, she could almost convince anyone she was a man-killer. Eva was brilliant at faking things. "And bless you," continued Lacey, "for instilling our faith in passion. Even though Gia and Sebastian are bound by an ancient curse to wake up on opposite sides of the world the moment after orgasm, you gave us a community, an obsesh. Can't wait for Cursed Book 15. Amid applause, Eva smiled brightly and attempted to rise. Unfortunately, she forgot she was handcuffed to the chair, and she was abruptly yanked back down. Everyone gasped as Eva plummeted to the floor. Her dominatrix waitress sprang to action 2 seconds too late, uncuffing her from the overturned chair. "Whoa, too much Merlot," giggled Eva, popping back up. It was a lie. She couldn't drink alcohol with her health issues. 2 sips would land her in the ER. Eva raised her glass of seltzer up at the sea of happily wasted boomers. Most of them, like Lacey, were wearing Gia's signature purple witch hat. A handful had a blingy S pendant pinned to their Chico's blouses. It was Sebastian's S, meant to emulate the vampire's scrawled signature. $29.99 at evamercymercyme.com. Eva had the same S branded on her forearm, a regrettable decision made years ago on a blurry night by a blurry girl. "I can't thank you enough," she gushed. "Really, your support keeps the cursed world turning. I hope Book 15 lives up to your expectations. If I ever write it." The manuscript was due in a week, and paralyzed with writer's block, she'd barely cobbled together 5 chapters. Swiftly, she changed the subject. "So, does anyone read Variety?" This was a Red Book and Martha Stewart living crowd, so no. "Exciting news broke yesterday." Eva sat down her glass and clasped her black manicured fingers under her chin. "Our wish was granted. Cursed has been optioned for film rights." There were shrieks. Someone threw a witch hat in the air. A flushed blonde whipped out her iPhone and recorded Eva's speech so she could post it to Kirst's Facebook fan page later. Along with several Tumblr and Twitter fan accounts, Facebook was a deeply important book promo platform for Eva, where her readers shared fan art, gossiped, wrote obscene fan fiction, and debated casting decisions for the movie they'd fantasized about for years. I landed a producer, a black female producer, thank you, Jesus, who really gets our world. Her last film was a steamy Sundance short about a real estate agent seducing a werewolf. We're interviewing directors now. Sebastian on film? Imagine, swooned a faux redhead. We just need a black actor with bronze eyes, one who's a good biter. Eva, how do I ask my husband to bite me? Whined a Meryl Streep lookalike. This always happened. The sex talk. Arousal through biting is a thing, you know. It's called odaxalania, Eva divulged. Just tell him you want it. Whispered in his ear. Odaxalania me, slurred Meryl. Catchy, Eva said with a wink. I'm stoked to see big screen Gia, said a husky voiced brunette. She's such a fearless warrior. Sebastian's supposed to be the scary one, but she's killed armies of vampire hunters to protect him. Right? The force of teen girl passion could power nations. With a twinkle in her eye, Eva launched into the mini monologue she'd perfected ages ago. This part was still fun. We're taught that men are all animal impulse and id, but girls get there first. And then society stomps it out, said the brunette. Word. Eva knew the pain was close. Before an episode, her mask slipped and the black popped out. Look at history, Eva continued, rubbing a temple. Roxanne Shanté out-rapping grown men at 14. Serena winning the U.S. Open at 17. Mary Shelley writing Frankenstein at 18. Josephine Baker conquering Paris at 19. Zelda Fitzgerald high school diary was so fire that her future husband stole entire passages to write The Great Gatsby. The 18th century poet Phyllis Wheatley published her first piece at 14 while enslaved. Joan of Arc, Greta Thunberg, teen girls rearranging the fucking world. An electrified hush fell over the group, but Eva was sinking. The pounding in her temples was sharpening by the millisecond. Sugar triggered her condition, and she'd been force-fed all those cookies. She knew better, but she'd been cuffed. Absent-mindedly, Eva snapped the rubber band she always wore around her right wrist. It was a pain distraction, an old trick. Remember when Kate Winslet escapes the Titanic? Asked the brunette. And then jumps back on to be with Leo? That's teen girl passion. I'd do that today to get to Leo, admitted Lacey, and I'm 41. She was 55. Just like Gia, gasped a petite woman with a clip-on bun. In every book, she fights her way back to Sebastian, despite knowing that when they have sex, they're cursed to lose each other again. It's a metaphor, said Eva, her vision blurring. No matter how perilous the journey, it's never over for true soulmates. Who doesn't want a connection that burns forever, despite distance, time, and curses? She didn't. The thought of perilous love made her nauseous. Confession, whispered a flushed blonde on her fourth glass of rosé. My son plays Ohio State basketball, and I get so horny during games. To me, all those beautiful black players are Sebastian. Speechless, Eva gulped down her seltzer. This'll be my legacy, she thought. I have friends organizing protest rallies and writing Pulitzer Prize-winning New Yorker essays on race in America. My own daughter's so militant, she begged a cop to arrest her at the middle school march on Midtown. But my contribution to these troubled times will be inciting white women of a certain age to sexually profile black student athletes who'd really just like to make it to the NBA in peace. Then Eva's head was seized by a thunderous hammering. She clutched the edge of her seat with trembling fingers, bracing herself for each blow. The world went fuzzy. Features were melting off faces like Dolly's clocks. The competing perfumes in the room made her stomach lurch, and then the hammer slammed into her face harder and faster, aiming to maim, and she heard everything at a punishing decibel. The AC, clanging silverware. Merciful Christ, did someone open a candy wrapper in Connecticut? They always escalated so fast. The ruthlessly violent migraines that had tortured her since childhood and baffled the most decorated specialists on the East Coast. Eva's eyelids started to droop. In a well-practiced fake-out, she raised her eyebrows to look alert, shooting a dazzling smile at her audience. Looking at those body broads, she felt the low-grade envy she always felt in a group. They were normal. They could do things. Regular-ass things, like diving headfirst into a pool, holding up their end of a conversation for more than 20 minutes, burning scented candles, getting tipsy, surviving an F-train ride while a subway saxophonist blared "Ain't Nobody" for 9 stops, enjoying sex in ambitious positions, laughing too heartily, crying too mightily, breathing too deeply, walking too swiftly. Living, period. She'd bet these women could do most of these things without shredding agony, smiting them like punishment from an angry god. What was it like? The luxury of not hurting. I'm an alien, Eva thought. She'd always felt as if she were impersonating a human, and she accepted it. But she'd never stopped fantasizing about being unsick. Excuse me for a sec, Eva managed. Just need to call my daughter. Calmly clutching her tote, she swept through the red velvet door of the private room, weaving through tables of suburban theater goers gushing over Hamilton. She spotted the ladies' lounge behind the hostess area. She rushed in, burst into a handicapped stall with a sink, and vomited into the toilet. For moments afterward, Eva stood there, breathing deeply through the pain, the way her team of neurologists, acupuncturists, and Eastern healers had taught her. Then she vomited again. Swaying, she grasped the sink rim for balance. Her eyeliner was a mess now. This was why she wore it smudged. She never knew when an episode would strike, so if her makeup aesthetic was Rihanna at 3 a.m., then she could pretend it was intentional. Eva pulled her box of disposable painkiller injections out of her bag. Yanking up her dress, she exposed her scar-addled thigh, jabbed in a needle, and tossed it in the trash. For good measure, she grabbed an Altoids tin and chose a medical marijuana gummy bear, prescribed by NYC's top pain specialist. Thank you very much. She chomped off an ear. Fuck it, she thought, and tossed the whole thing in her mouth. This would take the edge off until nighttime so she could get through mommy-daughter after-school rituals, and then crash. Gingerly, Eva leaned back against the tiled wall. Her lids shuddered closed. Sickness wasn't sexy, and her disability was invisible. She wasn't missing a limb or in a full body cast. Her level of suffering seemed impossible for others to fathom. After all, everyone got headaches sometimes, like during coffee withdrawal or the flu. So she hid it. All people knew was that Eva canceled plans a lot. Busy writing. And was prone to fainting like at Denise and Todd's wedding. Too much Prosecco. Or forgot words mid-sentence. Sorry, just distracted. Or disappeared for weeks at a time. A writing retreat. Definitely not an inpatient stay in Mount Sinai's pain ward. White lies were easier than the truth. Case in point, what would the orgasmic Ohioans think if they knew she wanted to strangle Sebastian and Gia, to banish them to wherever those Twilight fuckers went? She loved her books at first. She wrote to tickle herself, the ideas sparkling like wildfire. Then she wrote for her readers. Now she lifted entire plot points from the comments sections of cursed fan sites, the depth of author cheating. She just couldn't peddle tortured romance anymore. Years ago, she thought love wasn't real unless it drew blood. She, Sebastian, and Gia were all teens once, sharing the same twisted brain. Sebastian and Gia didn't grow up, but Eva did. She wanted Kirst to die, but the series provided a stable, secure life for Audrey. Eva had fought dragons to spare her baby from the childhood she'd had, and she'd won. She just wished she could find her spark again. The movie might help her rescue it. Not only that, but deep down, Eva hoped it'd give her a fresh start. With her cut from the deal, she could finally afford to take a break from writing Cursed and work on her dream book, the one that had been buzzing under her skin forever. She was so much more than her silly, raunchy romance. At least she hoped she was. It was time for her to prove it to herself. Feeling a bit better, Eva rinsed her mouth out with her travel-sized mouthwash. Almost unconsciously, she raised her left middle finger where she always wore her vintage cameo ring. She felt naked without it, to her nose, and inhaled. It was an old habit. The barely there scent of some long-ago woman's perfume always soothed her. Finally, in a quiet moment, she decided to check her phone. Today, 12:45 p.m., Queen Cece. Ma'am, where are you? As your editor, I hope you're writing. As your best friend, I demand you take a break. Huge news. Text back. Today, 1:11 p.m., Sydney the producer. Been trying to get you for 3 hours. I think I found our director. Call me. Today, 2:40 p.m., my baby. Did you get me the feathers for my Feministicon art project? I need it for Grandma's portrait, specifically her hair. It was so fluffy. Thanks, Mama. Enjoy your cringy sex luncheon. XO. Today, 3:04 p.m., Jackie, the weirdly hypochondriac sitter I only use for emergencies. Audrey's home from the debate team pizza lunch, but she brought 20 kids with her. I noted on my childcare.com profile that I don't do large groups. Agoraphobia, germophobia, claustrophobia. Jesus, Audrey, she moaned. Lightheaded from her gummy and injection cocktail, she scheduled an Uber, offered her apologies to the Ohio players, and was Brooklyn-bound in 6 minutes. Chapter 2 Single Mom Superhero. Jackie, where's Audrey? Breathless, Eva stood in the doorway of her apartment. She took a cursory sweep of the bright, eclectic space. Her Indonesian, via home goods, throw pillows and rugs were in their rightful place. Not a book was askew in the wall-to-wall library behind the purple armoire she'd bought when Prince died. Her Pinterest-inspired Park Slope home was exactly how she'd left it. Park Slope was a hippy-dippy Brooklyn hood, thoroughly gentrified with wealthy liberal families. Most of the parents had kids when they were in their late 30s, after having conquered careers in new media, advertising, publishing, or in one celebrated case, frozen songwriting. Mostly white, the hood felt diverse because of its sprinkling of same-sex parents and biracial kids in predominantly Asian-Jewish, Black-Jewish, or Asian-Black combos. Eva and Audrey stood out because A, Eva was a decade younger than the other moms, B, she was single, and C, Audrey had a Black mom and a Black father, as opposed to her dad being Jewish or Vietnamese or a woman. Oh, hey, Jackie the babysitter was chilling on the couch with her feet propped up on a boho ottoman. Jackie, I was working. I ran here from Times Square. On foot? Jackie, a divinity student at Columbia, was very literal. Eva stared at her. Audrey's in her room with the kids, on Snapchat. Eva squeezed her eyes shut and fisted her hands. Audrey Zora Tony Mercy Moore. She heard murmurs bubbling from Audrey's bedroom, down the short hallway. Then a crash. Giggles. Finally, Audrey cracked the door and slipped out, grinning guiltily. At 12, Audrey was Eva's height, with her dimples, curls, and rich hazelnut complexion. But she took her style cues from Willow Smith and Yara Shahidi, hence the two space buns atop her head, tie-dye crop top, cutoffs, and filas. With her mile-long lashes and gawky frame, she looked like Bambi at her first Coachella. Audrey galloped over to her mother, giving her a hearty hug. "Mommy, are those my jeans? You look so cute." Pronounced cute, no T. Eva disentangled herself from Audrey's grasp. "Did I say you could bring the entire debate team home?"
"But we're just..."
"You think I don't know what you're doing?" Eva lowered her voice. "Did you charge them?" Audrey sputtered. "Did you charge them?"
"It's an exchange of goods, Mom. I provide counseling services, and they pay me. Everyone at Cheshire Prep is addicted to my Snapchat therapy sessions. The one when I cured Delilah's fear of flying coach? I'm a legend."
"You're a child. When you're sleepy, you still pronounce breakfast, breakfix." Audrey groaned.
"Look, when I'm a celebrity therapist making several mil a year, we'll giggle about this over bubble tea."
"I told you to stop this therapy business," hissed Eva. "I don't send you to that fancy private school to hustle white children out of their lunch money."
"Reparations,"
said Jackie from the couch. Eva jumped, forgetting that the babysitter was still there. Sensing her dismissal, Jackie scurried out the door while Audrey murdered her with her eyeballs. She whipped her head around to her mother and said,
"I'm too old for a babysitter. And Jackie is the entire worst with her judgmental eyes and Crocs with socks."
"Audrey," started Eva, rubbing a temple, "what do I always say?"
"Resist, persist, insist," she recited.
"What else?"
"I've never been sleepier than I am at this moment."
"What else?"
Audrey sighed, defeated. "I trust you, you trust me."
"Right. When you break my rules, I can't trust you. You're grounded. No devices for 2 weeks."
Audrey shrieked. The noise reverberated in Eva's head for 30 seconds. "No phone? What am I gonna do?"
"Who knows? Read Goosebumps and write poems to Usher like I did at your age." Eva stormed down the hall and entered Audrey's room. 20 girls were crammed on the bunk beds and floor, a blur of spring break tanned skin and crop tops.
"Hi, girls. You know you're always welcome here if Audrey asks my permission, but she didn't, so time to go."
Eva beamed, careful not to disrupt her standing as cool mom, which wasn't supposed to matter, but it did. "We'll host a sleepover soon," promised Eva.
"It'll be lit." "Tell me you didn't just say lit,"
wailed Audrey from the living room. One by one, the girls filed out of the bedroom. Audrey stood slumped next to the front door, a droopy, weeping willow of misery. She pulled a wad of cash out of her back pocket, and as the girls left, Audrey handed each one her rightful $20. A few of the girls hugged her. It was like a funeral procession.
"Whoa!"
Eva noticed a blonde boy attempting to sneak out with the crowd. He rose to his full height, a full 3 heads taller than Eva.
"Who are you?"
"Oh my God, Mom, that's Coco Jean's stepbrother."
"You're Coco Jean's stepbrother? Why are you so tall?"
"I'm 16.
"You're in high school?"
Eva glared at Audrey, who sprinted down the hall and flung herself on her bottom bunk.
"Yeah, but I'm chill. I'm in the honors program at Dalton."
"Oh, I'm Bates in relief. Why are you hanging out with 12-year-olds?
Audrey's like a really gifted mental health specialist. She's helping me manage the anxiety I feel due to my gluten allergy."
"Quick question. Did my daughter diagnose this gluten allergy?"
"He breaks out whenever he eats focaccia or crostini," Audrey yelled from her bedroom. "What would you call that?"
"Listen, you seem like a nice, gullible kid, but you being here in my home without my knowledge is a hard no."
"I can't believe I missed my hip-hop violin lesson for this," he grumbled, storming out.
Eva leaned against the door for a moment, trying to decide how deeply she was going to freak out. In these moments, she wished she'd had the kind of mom she could call for advice. She had an ex-husband, but she couldn't call him for advice either. Troy Moore, a Pixar animator, had 2 settings, cheerful and really cheerful. Complicated emotions upset his worldview.
It was why Eva had fallen for him. He'd been a ray of light back when everything in Eva's world had been dark. She had literally tripped over him in the lobby of Mount Sinai Hospital. Troy had been a volunteer, sketching portraits for patients. She'd realized she liked him when she scrambled to hide the IV bruises on her arms as a result of her week-long stay upstairs. After 6 weeks of rom-com cute dates, they wed in City Hall. Audrey was born 7 months later. But by then, they'd unraveled. The girl Troy had fallen for, the one who could sustain bubbly spontaneity on dates and lusty sleepovers, was different at home, dazed from pain and pills. And soon her illness overwhelmed Troy's life, killing patience, choking love. Troy belonged to the church of Just Think Good Thoughts. Despite watching Eva suffer, the nights she'd repeatedly smash her forehead against the headboard in her sleep, or the time she fainted into a Too Fast, Too Furious display at Blockbuster, he believed the real issue was her outlook. Couldn't she meditate it away, send positive energy into the universe? This always baffled Eva. The universe where? Could he provide cross streets? Would someone greet the positive energy when it landed, and would the greeter be Lena Horne's Glinda in The Wiz like she imagined? Once, after a late night at Pixar, Troy climbed into bed next to his fetal-positioned wife. She'd just given herself a Toradol injection in the thigh, and a little blood had leaked through her Band-Aid onto their dove-gray sheets. Moving was excruciating, so Eva just lay in it. Through slitted eyes, she saw revulsion, and just beneath it, martyrdom. She was gross. Cute girls weren't supposed to be gross. Quietly, Troy snuck out and slept on the couch, and never returned to their bed. In their one couples counseling session, he admitted the truth. "I wanted a wife," he wept, "not a patient." Troy was too polite to end it, so Eva liberated him. Audrey was 19 months old. She was 22. Troy went on to be blissfully happy with his second wife, a yogi named Athena Marigold. They used words like paleo and artisanal and lived in Santa Monica, where Audrey spent her summers. Next Sunday, she was flying out to Dadafornia, the name Audrey gave her West Coast trips, where Troy excelled as a carefree summertime dad. But tricky stuff? An almost man sneaking into his baby's room? Not his territory. Eva staggered to her couch. She'd never been able to think clearly with jeans on, so she wriggled out of them. Sitting there in Wonder Woman panties, she Googled tween discipline tips on her phone. The top article suggested a behavior contract. She had neither the legal prowess nor the energy to draw up a contract. Huffing, she tossed her phone aside and clicked on the Apple TV. When life got too challenging, she watched Insecure.
"Mommy?"
She looked up, and there was Audrey, framed by a 120-year-old arched entryway. Her face was puffy and tear-streaked. She'd added a black shawl and oversized Ray-Bans to her outfit. Eva tried to look stern. Tough work without pants. "Audrey, what are you wearing?"
"This is my upscale sadness outfit."
"Nailed it," Eva admitted. Audrey cleared her throat.
"Therapy is my calling, but I should have closed my practice when you told me to. I'm sorry for that, and for having Coco Jean's brother over. Though it's heterotypical of you to assume that just because he's a boy, we're being weird."
Heterotypical? Brooklyn private schools produced ultra-progressive students. They protested abortion bans and marched for gun control. Last month, Audrey's seventh-grade class carried buckets of water 2 miles across Prospect Park to empathize with the plight of sub-Saharan women. The upside? A top-notch liberal education. The downside? Kids who struggled to divide decimals or name a state capital. "Honey, can you give me a sec?" Eva sighed, shutting her eyes. "I just need to think." Audrey knew that think meant
rest her head, and she sulked back into her room. Watching her through one open eye, Eva felt a wistful pang. Audrey had been the dreamiest, most delightful kid. Now she was an eye roll shaped like a human. 13 was coming, and who knew what horrors it'd bring. She'd sneak out or learn to lie or discover weed. Not Eva's, though, which was well hidden in her dildo drawer. Just then her phone buzzed. It was Cece Sinclair, Eva's best friend and Parker and Rowe Publishing's most celebrated book editor. Eva answered with a tortured, "What?" "You're alive! According to my Fitbit, I've been deceased for weeks." "You're in there. I hear Issa Rae through the phone. I'm outside. I'll let myself in." Cece swept through the door seconds later. She was overwhelming in every way. 6 feet tall, creamy cocoa skin, bleach blonde coils, a product of Spelman, Vineyard Summers, and white-gloved cotillions with talented 10th Debs. She dressed exclusively in vintage Halston and always appeared to have leapt off a 1978 Vogue cover. Or at least to be someone who knew Pat Cleveland. She did, actually. Cece knew everyone. At 45, she'd long been one of the industry's most notorious editors, but her unofficial title was Social Queen of Black Literati. She collected authors, nurtured them, and whispered plot advice over cocktails, and her membership-only book, art, film, world parties were legendary. Eva had quickly discovered all of this after she'd won the short story contest and Cece had become her editor. During their introductory lunch on the Princeton campus, Cece took one look at the teen's haunted doe eyes and chaotic coffee shop poetess curls, a description she oft repeated, and her soul screamed, "Project!" Before Eva knew it, she had a doting big sister. Cece helped her move to Brooklyn, quit her vices, and learn the art of curl maintenance, and introduced her to a social circle of happening young writers. Cece was bossy as hell, but she'd earned it. There'd be no Eva without her. Humming, the glamazon disappeared into the kitchen, emerging seconds later with a glass of Pinot Grigio and the ice pack Eva kept in the freezer. Sitting beside her, Cece slipped the frosty pack atop Eva's head with a flourish, as if it were a crown. Cece was one of the few people who really knew about Eva's condition, and she helped out however she could. "I'm here," she announced grandly, "to discuss the state of the Black author panel." "The Brooklyn Museum event you're moderating tomorrow night? Belinda's a panelist, right?" Celebrated poet Belinda Love was their close friend. "Auntie Cece!" Audrey appeared again, wearing her third costume change, a neon unicorn onesie. "Audrey Bear! I've been meaning to text you for stress management advice. My kitchen renovation is taking such a toll." Audrey plopped down on Cece's lap. "Try chocolate meditation. You stick a Hershey's Kiss in your mouth and sit quietly letting it melt. No chewing. It's about mindfulness." "I've no doubt, doll, but is there a sugar-free option?" "Cece, focus," wailed Eva, smushing the ice pack against her temple. "The panel? Oh, an author dropped out. She got salmonella from a food truck in British Columbia." Audrey frowned. "Columbia has a British section?" Brooklyn schools strike again, thought Eva. No concept of geography, but she's mastered mindfulness. "British Columbia's in Canada, babe," Eva said. "Interesting. I could have looked it up if I had a phone." Sulkily, Audrey rose and disappeared back into her room. "Long story short," continued Cece, "I offered you as a replacement. You're on the panel." She shimmied her shoulders, pleased with her sorcery. "Every relevant media outlet is invited. It'll be live streamed. This is the career boost you need." The blood drained from Eva's face. "Me? No, I can't. I'm not qualified to pontificate on race in America. You know how intense it'll get. Every Black book event since the election has turned into a woke-off. You named your child after a noted civil rights warrior. Are you not woke?" "I'm woke recreationally.
Belinda and the other panelists are woke professionally. They have NAACP awards and are on the talk show circuit. Who was the panelist with food poisoning?
Cece paused.
Zadie Smith.
With a defeated grimace, Eva slid the ice pack over her eyes.
Cece, this is a New York Times-sponsored panel at the Brooklyn Museum. I'm not a serious author. I'm a last-minute airport purchase.
Cece's brow furrowed.
Let's be absolutely real. You tried for ages to get a film deal. You finally got a producer, and now quality directors aren't biting because cursed is too genre. Show Hollywood your power. This'll be PR gold. Well, this plus the 2019 Black Literary Excellence Award you'll win on Sunday.
You think I'll win?
There's a vampire witch mermaid threesome scene in Cursed 14, noted Cece. You'll win for audacity alone.
Eva groaned into a throw pillow. I'm not up to this.
You're nervous about sharing a stage with Belinda, the daughter of a hairdresser?
Eva glared at her. Beyonce's the daughter of a hairdresser.
Fine, go explain to Audrey why you're scared to try new things.
She threw up her hands. Of course, Cece got her with the Audrey stuff. Every time Eva made a move, she considered how it looked to her daughter. Eva's parenting wasn't mommy blog approved. They often had pizza for dinner and fell asleep watching Succession. And since childcare was a luxury, Audrey attended too many grown-up events. Plus, on bad head days, Eva allowed Audrey unlimited TikTok time after homework so she could crash for a bit. But Eva let herself off the hook for those things. When it came to mothering, what mattered to her was setting a powerful example. When Audrey audited her memories, Eva wanted her to remember a ballsy woman who invented her life from scratch. No man, no help, no problem. The single mom superhero myth, thought Eva. And it's a trap. Eva dug the heels of her hands into her eye sockets. What am I gonna wear?
Cece grinned. I already have a Gucci number on hold for you. You're adorable. But you dress like you host a hip-hop podcast, she said with a sigh. It'll be an adventure. Writers need stimulation. The thrill of your day can't be memorizing your positive Amazon reviews.
I don't do that anymore, Eva grumbled.
Speaking of stimulation, will you please revisit Tinder? When's the last time you met someone you didn't ghost after 3 dates?
I'm doing them a favor by ghosting, Eva pointed to her Wonder Woman panties. Would you want to fuck this?
There's a fetish for everything, said Cece generously.
Eva chuckled. When I feel lonely, I scroll through Tinder and remind myself what I'm missing, which is dudes with coconut-oiled beards all posing next to the same graffitied wall in Dumbo with profiles written entirely in emojis. And I remember that I'm not lonely, I'm alone. When I'm comatose from writing and mothering, when I'm hurting too badly to cook, talk, or smile, I curl up with alone like a security blanket. Alone doesn't care that I don't shave my legs in the winter. Alone never gets disappointed by me. Eva sighed. It's the best relationship I've ever been in.
Are you speaking metaphorically? Asked Cece. Or are you dating a man named Alone?
You can't be serious.
My doorman is a SoundCloud rapper named Sincere. One never knows.
I like being single, Eva continued quietly. I don't want anyone to have to really see me.
They sat in silence, Eva idly snapping the rubber band on her wrist.
I'm scared, she admitted finally.
Good.
Cece kissed her cheek. I've seen what you come up with when you're scared.